Chapter 26. Flora's father was a careful driver. He kept his left hand at 10 o'clock on the steering wheel, and his right hand at 2. He never took his eyes off the road. He did not go fast. "Speed," her father often said. "That is what will kill you. That and taking your eyes off the road. Never, ever take your eyes off the road." "Pop," said Flora, "I need to talk to you." "Okay," said her father. He kept his eyes on the road. "About what?" "That sack and the shovel." "What sack?" said her father. "What shovel?" It occurred to Flora that her father would make an excellent spy. He never really answered questions. Instead, when asked a question, he simply responded with a nifty sidestep or a question of his own. For instance, when her parents were getting their divorce, Flora had a conversation with her father that went something like this. "Flora, are you and Mom getting divorced?" Flora's father, "Who says we're getting divorced?" Flora, "Mom." Flora's father, "Is that what she said?" Flora, "That's what she said." Flora's father, "I wonder why she said that." And then he started to cry. Spies probably didn't cry, but still. "There's a sack and a shovel in the trunk of the car, Pop," said Flora. "Is there?" said her father. "I saw you put them in there." "It's true, I did put a sack and a shovel in the trunk of the car." The criminal element said that it was a good idea to engage in relentless, open-ended questions. If you question with enough ferocity, people are sometimes surprised into answering questions that they do not intend to answer. When in doubt, question, question more, question faster. "Why?" said Flora. "I intend to dig a hole," said her father. "For what?" said Flora. "A thing that I'm going to bury." "What thing are you going to bury?" "A sack." "Why are you burying a sack?" "Because your mother asked me to." "Why did she ask you to bury a sack?" Her father tapped his fingers on the steering wheel. He stared straight ahead. "Why did she ask me to bury a sack? Why did she ask me to bury a sack? That's a good one. Hey, I know. Do you want to get something to eat?" "What?" said Flora. "How about some lunch?" said her father. "For the love of Pete," said Flora. "Or some breakfast. How about we stop and eat a meal? Any meal?" Flora sighed. The criminal element advised, stalling, delaying, and obfuscation of every possible sort when it came to dealing with a criminal. Her father wasn't a criminal. Not exactly, but he had been enlisted in the service of villainy. Basically, he was in cahoots with an arch nemesis. So maybe it would be good to stall, to delay the inevitable showdown by going into a restaurant. Besides, the squirrel was hungry, and he would need to be strong for the battle ahead. "Okay," said Flora. "Okay, sure. Let's eat." Chapter 27. The World in All Its Smelly Glory. "Okay, sure, let's eat. What wonderful words those are," thought Ulysses. "Let's eat. Talk about poetry. This girl was happy. He was happy because he was with Flora. He was happy because he had the words from Tootie's poem flowing through his head and heart. He was happy because he was going to be fed soon. And he was happy because he was, well, happy." He climbed out of the shoebox and put his front paws on the door and his nose out the open window. He was a squirrel riding in a car on a summer day with someone he loved. His whiskers and nose were in the breeze, and there were so many smells. Overflowing trash cans, just cut grass, warm, sun-warmed patches of pavement, the loamy richness of dirt, earthworms, loamy smelling too, often difficult to distinguish from the smell of dirt. Dog, more dog, dog again. Oh, dogs. Small dogs, large dogs, foolish dogs. The torturing of dogs was the one reliable pleasure of a squirrel's existence. The tang of fertilizer, a faint whiff of birdseed, something baking, the hidden hint of nuttiness. Pecan? Acorn? The small, apologetic, "don't mind me" odor of mouse, and the ruthless stench of cat. Cats were terrible. Cats were never to be trusted. Never. The world in all its smelly glory, in all its treachery and joy and nuttiness, washed over Ulysses, ran through him, filled him. He could smell everything. He could even smell the blue of the sky. He wanted to capture it. He wanted to write it down. He wanted to tell Flora. He turned and looked at her. "Keep your eyes open for malfeasance," she said to him. Ulysses nodded. The words from Tootie's poem sounded in his head. "Flare up like flame." Yes, he thought, that's what I'll do. I'll flare up like flame, and I'll write it all down. Chapter 28. The Giant Do-Nut. "You'll have to leave the squirrel in the car," said Flora's father as he pulled into the parking lot of the Giant Do-Nut. "No," said Flora, "it's too hot." "I'll leave the windows down," said her father. "Someone will steal them." "You think someone would steal them?" Her father sounded doubtful but hopeful. "Who would steal a squirrel?" "A criminal," said Flora. The criminal element spoke often and passionately about the nefarious activities that every human being is capable of. Not only did it insist that the human heart was dark beyond all reckoning, it also likened the heart to a river, and further it said, "If we are not careful, that river can carry us along in its hidden currents of want and anger and need, and transform each of us into the very criminal we fear." "The human heart is a deep, dark river with hidden currents," Flora said to her father. "Criminals are everywhere." Her father tapped his fingers on the steering wheel. "I wish I could disagree with you, but I can't." Ulysses sneezed. "Bless you," said her father. "I'm not leaving him," said Flora. "Alfred T. Slipper took his parakeet, Dolores with him, everywhere, sometimes even to the offices of the Paxtequit Life Insurance Company." "Not without my parakeet," that was what Alfred said. "Not without my squirrel," said Flora. If her father recognized the sentence, if the words reminded him of their time together reading about Incandesto, he didn't show it. He merely sighed. "Bring him in, then," he said, "but keep the lid on the shoebox." Ulysses climbed into the shoebox, and Flora dutifully lowered the lid on his small face. "Okay," she said. "All right." She climbed out of the car, and then she stood and looked up at the giant do-nut sign. "Giant do-nuts inside," the sign screamed in neon letters, while an extremely large donut disappeared over and over again into a cup of coffee. But there was no hand on the donut. "Who," Flora wondered, "is doing the dunking?" A small shiver ran down her spine. "What if we are all donuts just waiting to be dunked?" she thought. It was the kind of question that William Spiver would ask. She could hear him asking it. It was also the kind of question that William Spiver would have an answer for. That was the thing about William Spiver. He always had an answer, even if it was an annoying one. "Listen to me," she whispered to the shoebox. "You are not a donut waiting to be dunked. You are a superhero. Do not let yourself be tricked or fooled. Remember the shovel. Keep an eye on George Buckman." Her father got out of the car. He put his hands in his pockets and jingled his change. "Shall we?" he said. "Stall. Delay. Obfuscate. Let's," said Flora. Chapter 29. Coochie Coo. The giant do-nut smelled like fried eggs and donuts in other people's closets. The dining room was full of laughter and donut dunking. A waitress sat Flora and her father at a booth in the corner and handed them glossy, enormous menus. Flora, surreptitiously, the criminal element recommended surreptitious action at all possible junctures, removed the lid from the shoebox. Ulysses poked his head out and looked around the restaurant, and then he turned his attention to the menu. He stared at it with a dreamy look on his face. "Get whatever you want," said Flora's father. "Order your heart's desire." Ulysses emitted a happy sigh. "Pay attention," whispered Flora. A waitress came and stood over them. She tapped her pencil on the order pad. "What can I get you?" she said. Her name tag spelled out her name in all capital letters. Rita. Flora narrowed her eyes. The exclamation point made Rita seem untrustworthy, or at least insincere. "Well," said Rita, "what's it gonna be?" Her hair was piled up very, very high on her head. She looked like Marie Antoinette. Not that Flora had ever seen Marie Antoinette, but she had read about her in a Terrible Things Can Happen to You issue on the French Revolution. Marie Antoinette, from the little bit that Flora knew about her, would have made a very bad waitress. Flora suddenly remembered that she had a squirrel in her lap. She tapped Ulysses on the head again. "Lie low," she whispered to him, "but be prepared." She arranged the washcloth so that he was almost completely hidden. "What you got there?" asked Rita. "Where?" said Flora. "In the box," said Rita. "Got a baby doll in the box? Are you talking to your baby doll?" "Talking to my baby doll?" said Flora. She felt a flush of outrage crawl up her cheeks. For the love of Pete! She was 10 years old, almost 11. She knew how to administer CPR. She knew how to outwit an arch nemesis. She was acquainted with the profound importance of seal blubber. She was the sidekick to a superhero. Plus, she was a cynic. What self-respecting cynic would carry around a doll in a shoebox? "I do not," said Flora, "have a baby doll." "Let me see her," said Rita. "Don't be shy." She bent over, her big Marie Antoinette hair scraped against Flora's chin. "No," said Flora. "George Buckman," said Flora's father in a worried voice. "How do you do?" "Coochie-coo," said Rita. Flora felt a very pointed, very specific sense of doom. Rita poked her pencil into the shoebox slowly, slowly. She pushed the washcloth around slowly. And the washcloth, oh so slowly, fell back and revealed Ulysses' whiskered face. "George Buckman," said her father in a much louder voice. "How do you do?" Rita screamed a long and impossibly loud scream. Ulysses screamed and returned, and then he leapt from the shoebox. At this point, things stopped proceeding at such a leisurely pace. The squirrel was airborne, and time swung back into action with a vengeance. At last, thought Flora, it's incandesto time. Chapter 30. Sunny Side Up. He had never been so frightened in his life. Never. The woman's face was monstrous. Her hair was monstrous. And the word on her name tag, Rita, appeared monstrous to him, too. Be calm, he told himself, as she poked her pencil around. He held himself as still as he could. But then Rita screamed, and it was absolutely impossible not to answer her long, piercing shriek with the piercing shriek of his own. She screamed, he screamed, and then every one of his animal instincts kicked in. He acted without thinking. He tried to escape. He leapt from the box and ended up somehow exactly where he did not want to be, in the middle of the monstrous hare. Rita jumped up and down. She put her hands on her head. She swatted and clawed, trying to dislodge him. The harder she hit him, the higher he jumped, the more fiercely the squirrel clung. In this way, Rita and Ulysses danced together around the giant do-nut. "What's happening?" someone shouted. "Her hair is on fire," someone answered. "No, no, there's something in her hair," another person shouted. "And it's alive!" "Arg!" screamed Rita. "Help me!" How, Ulysses wondered, had things gone so wrong? Only moments ago he had been looking at the giant do-nut menu, captivated by the glossy pictures of food and the dazzling descriptions that accompanied the pictures. There were giant donuts with sprinkles, giant donuts powdered iced, giant donuts filled with things, jelly, cream, chocolate. He had never had a giant donut. Actually, he had never had any kind of donut. They looked delicious, all of them. How was a squirrel to choose? And to complicate matters, there were eggs. Scrambled, poached, over easy, sunny side up. Sunny side up, thought Ulysses as he clung to Rita's hair. What a wonderful phrase. A man emerged from the kitchen. He had on a gigantic white hat, and he was holding something metal that flashed in the overhead lights of the giant do-nut. It was a knife. "Help me!" screamed Rita. "And me," thought Ulysses. "Help me, too!" But he was quite certain that the man with the knife had no intention of helping him. And then he heard Flora's voice. He couldn't see her because Rita was now spinning around and everything in the restaurant had become somewhat blurred. All the faces had become one face. All the screams had become one scream. But Flora's voice stood out. It was the voice of the person he loved. He concentrated on her words. He worked to understand her. "Ulysses," she shouted. "Ulysses, remember who you are." Remember who he was? Who was he? As if Flora had heard his unspoken question, she answered him. "You're Ulysses." "That's right," he thought. "I am." "Act," shouted Flora. This was good advice. Flora was absolutely right. He was Ulysses, and he must act. The man with the knife stepped toward Rita. Ulysses loosened his hold on her hair. He leapt again. This time he leapt with purpose and intent. He leapt with all his strength. He flew.